Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. Today's our weekly off-topic show. You know, America's digressing, but we're not the only country that is digressing. You know, situations are being perplexed across the world, and I felt it was fair to bring my brother from Canada, Wayne Peters, on because he's such a majestic aspect in this influence in Canada on speaking on the influences that are going on there. Wayne, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks a lot for having me, Don. I appreciate it a lot.
You know, most definitely. You know, sir, I kind of want to take you back a few weeks back. You know, I was watching you as you guys were doing a peaceful protest. You know, there was barricades up. You guys were not being boisterous. You were marching in a protest in peace. But yet, Antifa used the barriers that were put up to protect you to attack you, and in one situation they attack a person in your party, a good friend of yours, and use the barricades to beat him up. What is it like for you as a person that speaks their mind, you know, seeing this perplexed right before your eyes in your own country?
It was probably one of the most shocking things that I ever possibly could have imagined happening in Canada. I've done a lot of traveling. I've seen a lot of the planet, and to see something like that happening right here on our downtown streets in Canada was something I never thought I would see, let alone experience with my own eyes.
You know, I watched a live last night that you were on. You know, Canadians are very prideful, just as many Americans. I felt the show was a necessity because we too have our problems here. You know, as a journalist, I'm censored 9 out of every 10 times I put up a post. You know, just about every time I do a live, it's taken down. How hard is it for the Canadian aspect to get their message out, the word across? Because I know you have the same issues as I do as a journalist.
It's something that has been progressing at such a rate that it's impossible to keep up with. And as a journalist, you can write or speak something one day and the next day it's illegal, and you're being persecuted on those ever moving goalposts daily. And they're enforcing this across international borders, right? So even in places like America, where you have freedom of speech to a larger extent than we do in Canada, we are very, very handcuffed. And the instant you develop any kind of following or support, you are shut down and levied with now meaningful penalties, they call them. And we're talking six-figure penalties for a Twitter post that they may disagree with based on their feelings.
That's insane. You know, we've had our rights, you know, taken away from us. The freedom of speech aspect no longer exists. And in our country, you know, I did a post protecting our children against, you know, pedophilia and the LGBT, you know, as they're now protected under their banner in our country. And I was ridiculed. I was mocked. You know, Facebook banned me. And, you know, one thing they can't do, they can't stop my worldwide syndicated show, which we're on today. So, you know, that's a plus. We don't have to deal with the derogatory comments. You know, what is the stance on the fleecing of Canada? I understand the stance on the fleecing of America, and we'll get into that here in a second. But I want people to understand why I correlated the two countries together, because we are going through basically the same walk in life. But, you know, it's harsher on the Canadian side because, from my understanding now, all your news networks are going to be correlated into one aspect, and the news that your country is going to get to see basically might not even be the truth. Is that a, you know, correct assumption?
Well, it's very correct, actually, Don, and it's even more extreme than what people realize. There are basically six major news outlets in Canada, and the Prime Minister's office levied a $690 million grant to any of these major news outlets that follow along their guidelines of their newly formed Ministry of Truth. Literally, no exaggeration, right out of straight out of Orwell, Canada now has a Ministry of Truth that works hand in hand mm-hmm. with the social media companies and the mainstream media companies, and is supported and controlled by a union in their pocket again, which decides basically post by post almost as to whether you are breaking their feelings and are going to be earmarked for basically removal. And they're really taking it to heart, this no strike policy. So you're finding people that are not even getting a warning. They're just being removed from media platforms. And the what they call mainstream news in Canada is now absolutely nothing more than strictly Fed propaganda, 100%.
Yeah, it truly is. Now, I want to take one more question, then I'll turn it over to my panel. You know, it's heartbreaking to watch your lives because I see the struggle. You know, I want to go back to that day that Antifa attacked you and your peaceful mm-hmm. protesters, you know, trying to protect the country, the sovereign country that you love. You know, there was a gentleman that followed you around everywhere you went. You didn't know who the gentleman was. He was taking pictures of you. He followed you everywhere. How bad is that aspect for the Canadian side, you know, having somewhat like the Secret Service or CIA circumvent, follow you in every aspect of your walk?
Well, it was a little unnerving for me because, first of all, I'm originally a Western Canadian, and I found that when I came across the country in the big convoy, the United We Roll convoy in February, was where it was really apparent to me the disparity in the messages in the news. The people from the East weren't getting told what was happening in the West and vice versa. So I took it upon myself to come out here to Central Canada, to the heartland of the cancer, mm-hmm. and to spread the message, the truth, through the rest of Canada. And what I saw in this last 2 months here following these stories is an escalation and a progression that is very well funded. It is very well organized. And what is becoming extremely apparent is that this is the work of an actual international organization, which by every action is a definition of terrorism. So this is what where the problem lies, and is these groups that have carte blanche to do as they will based on the support of the leftist government that we have in place right now, to the extent where even things they have front companies, the biggest one here in Canada being called the AntiHateNetwork.ca, which sounds really great, really grand, really, really righteous, but is actually the front company for them to process their attacks on not just free speakers, but even political candidates, venues, anything that where people want to have exercise their right to peaceful assembly is now coming under government-funded, i.e. taxpayer-funded, terrorist attacks. And so what happened 2 weeks ago in Toronto was an escalation from the opposition side. They've been taking some hits where some of us independent reporters have been capturing the truth on video. They've been, a few of them have started to be getting arrested. And these guys have now basically what we're talking about is a liaison between Antifa and the LGBTQ community here in Canada as minorities, and using that as leverage or emotional fortitude and righteousness to attack any form of free speech under the guise of racism, xenophobia, white nationalism. It's laughable that my news page, which is followed primarily by 40 plus Canadians, gets labeled as a sleeper terrorist cell in Canada by these organizations which are heavily, heavily funded to the tune of $43 million recently by Mr. Trudeau. And so they're becoming far more bold. And after a few of them getting arrested in the past few weeks, what happened in Toronto was they were not going to be denied their pound of flesh. So as a small group of protesters, very peaceful protesters, were exiting the protest area where they were permitted to be. You have to have permits here in Canada for any protest or rally that you want to have. So these guys were entirely within their rights and legal guidelines to do what they were doing. And this mob of about 200 approximately actually trapped and the protest goers as they were leaving on a sidewalk with security fences on it and broke the security fences so that they were able to literally isolate small groups of two or three individuals at a time. And what I videoed and captured and saw with my own eyes, after 20 years of being in fire and rescue, I'd seen some horrors, but what I saw that day kept me awake. It still keeps me awake at night when I see a 70-year-old man with his head pinned to the sidewalk underneath of a boot while five or six punks are literally kicking the ever-loving stuffing out of him, and he even took a brick to his head, and still no charges laid. This is what's happening.
The same lies in our country here. You know, as before I turn it over to Travis, I did a post against, you know, pedophiles. And, you know, I was attacked by the LGBTQ. And they said that I had no basis to my argument, that these things don't happen at gay pride parades, that they don't allow 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds. But when I provided the truth, they mocked me. They ridiculed me. They said, what's wrong with a 8-year-old little boy being dressed as a girl, trans dancing? You can never win against the left. You know, in our country, if you speak out against the left, it's just as bad as it is in Canada. You know, we're oppressed. We're the ones that are being punished. So with that being said, I'm glad we were able to make this show happen today without anybody being able to step in and shut it down. With that being said, I'm going to pass the mic to Mr. Travis Hyland. Let him ask you a few questions.
I mean, Wayne, it's amazing to hear, you know, a lot of the similarities that we have between, you know, stuff that's going on with our Antifa down here, you know, and your Antifa up there. I mean, I brought up, you know, several times on this program that, you know, what happens in Canada a lot of the times is, you know, kind of like the beta testing ground for what is then going to be implemented in the United States, you know. We have free speech, you know, as it's supposedly set to us in our Constitution. But at the same time, you know, you see things like in 2012, which I've brought up many times, you know, our President Obama passed a bill allowing propaganda to be used, you know, against American citizens. And, you know, so I heard you, you know, talk about the Ministry of Truth up there. And I've also heard things about, you know, like particular stand-up comedians and things like that getting in trouble with the LGBT community and being fined massive amounts of dollars. I mean, could you explain a little more kind of how the Ministry of Truth works, you know, to Americans down here who haven't heard of anything like that, you know, haven't heard of something like if you misname or dead name a transgender person, you know, you can be thrown in prison, you can be fined, you know, massive untold sums of money. So, you know, I was wondering, you know, from your perspective, you know, what do you think about, you know, the Ministry of Truth and, you know, the further implications that has on Canada so that us in the United States, you know, can kind of see that, you know, that this could very well be the next step happening here.
Well, what you're seeing is you touched on a couple of things there that are very accurate as far as for Canada being the testing ground. What people aren't seeing enough of is that the groups that are behind all of this have learned their lessons from Europe. They've learned some lessons from Venezuela, and they have found trial and error. They've found ways to speed up their process. And it's the same agenda in Canada. And what makes it impossible is where some of the differences lie between Canada and the United States in this ministry of truth. They have no clear definition from one day to the next as to what is a crime or what isn't a crime. They are passing laws based on Sharia in our House of Commons in their last sitting here that support these moving goalposts. And some of the things that are different is that, you know, here we don't have things like the Second Amendment. We don't have the ability to defend ourselves against invaders, foreign and domestic, like you guys do. And so this Ministry of Truth is leaning on things like this new Christchurch call, this agreement that our PMO has signed with some of the other nations involved with the Agenda 2030 group, that are continuously tightening the noose on that. So even though you guys do get censored and whatnot, you still have the ability to say things and use words that won't land you in jail. And what's happening here is they've attached things like the Human Rights Commission in Canada and the to these things. So this is where you're seeing a comedian that somebody in the audience may be offended by, and they engage in lawfare, and they basically financially break you to the point where you will never be able to afford a bag of popcorn again until you're silenced. So these are some of the things that are a little bit different. In the United States, you have anti-doxing laws. Here, they do not. So the instant somebody's feelings are hurt, they can take you to the truth, the Ministry of Truth, and they can suspend you and basically place a media ban on you nationwide. Then they can pile on the lawsuits and keep you in court until you will never be able to earn a dollar again. Plus, they call publicly for threats against your life, your job, your family, your children, your community. All of these things happen in unison, right, to really make sure that they keep people from even thinking about speaking out.
That's kind of crazy, you know. You know, even though we're allotted, and I love the avenue that Travis took, because Canadians have to deal with the forefront, and we have to deal with it as it comes down. You know, we look at aspects like Hillary Clinton. You know, anybody that speaks against her, you know, obviously disappears. There's certain aspects about Obama that he created in our country that now, even as a journalist myself, I'm very regulated by the FCC here in the States. You know, it's a fine line that I have to walk, you know, doing the talk shows that I do. You know, the thing that burdens me the most is that, you know, just like with America, with, you know, our border laws and things of that nature, you know, we're critiqued about the internment camps, as they call them, and, you know, things are now coming out and circumventing to be lies. How hard is it for people that truly love Canada to deal with people that come in, make their money, and then leave Canada without putting money back into the country itself?
You know, that used to be something that we would discuss and have discussions about in Canada, but it's gotten so extreme that those kind of questions are not even being asked anymore, basically because a good portion, I think 70% of the population is less than 2 weeks from insolvency in Canada at this point in time. So people are so afraid to lose the last little bit that they have left, and they see anybody that makes even a statement or asks a question immediately comes under assault. That it's, I think we are approaching the status of Venezuela faster than anybody could have imagined even.
That's crazy. You know, to the listeners in Canada, because the show has been shared quite a bit, you can call in. The call-in number is on the post. It's 323-417-6810. The show is live. All you have to do is hit one, and you can come on. I'll bring you onto the show. You know, I'm going to toss the mic over to my good friend, Mr. M.F. Beck. M.F., if you have any questions for Wayne, the floor is yours, sir.
I don't have questions. It's not exactly my forte, but I'm fascinated by what's going on in your country, and mainly just how they're using the people, if that makes sense. Like, dividing the sides, you said you got the Western Canadians and the Eastern Canadians, and then you got Antifa up in the middle. It's a typical strategy to do that. Not only are you splitting the sides and getting them to fight amongst themselves, you know, then you pretty much integrate like a different group of people. It's like a bad anime trope. I hate to even put it that way, but it's, you know, you got the corrupt politicians and everybody else, get this group of people and turn them against the entire world or against the other side of the group or the other side of the realm or whatever. You know, and they feed them to where it's like it's their sense of justice, and they're the ones that are delivering justice, and they're the ones that are doing right, and everybody else is evil, and everybody else is demonized. And then what was that thing, like the Ministry of Truth? Yep. Like, that blows my mind. To be honest, like, I can't even deal with that. Like, I've had to deal with a little bit of something like that as far as the emotional thing over here. Like, I got a temporary restraining order put on me for a year, all because I affected somebody's mental calm. And, I mean, I'm serious. That was a legit charge. Like, I affected somebody's mental calm because I text some mean words. Like, it legit happened. You know, so it just intrigues me on everything's going over there and how you correlate it to Venezuela. Like, I'm a little curious on why that is. Like, is it really heading, like, in that, like, deep of a direction? Because you're 100% correct as far as we have the ability to fight back over here. So, that, in turn, they make it less physical against Americans. You know, they make Americans docile. We have so many distractions, things on a political scale. Get the infighting. We have the race battles. You know, we have the political battles. We have the fucking gender battles, excuse the language. You know, so there's a whole lot of ways to go, but it's like we can fight back. So what do? They make us docile. They make the people just really not care. And then the ones that do care, it's like, well, what do we do about it? Well, nobody else is going to do anything about it. So what do we do? And which in turn, it brings your situation a little precarious because it's, you know, you don't necessarily have a voice, or you do have a voice, but it's so limited. And as far as even on the emotional realm, like affecting somebody's emotions and that, you know, getting them, or butthurt in a way, I guess. But if that's enough to, you know, actually equal to like a legal matter, excuse me, I can't even think right now. But it does baffle me. Like, I'm not gonna lie, and it scares me that it could happen over here. But at least over here, Americans are at least arrogant enough to where it's like, regardless on what side of the room they are, they don't like being told what to do. So at least hopefully then they get off their butts and do something. But, you know, I commend what you're doing. I definitely do, because you're out there and you're, you know, you're living it, you're seeing it. You have a perspective that not a lot of people do, because, you know, the world of technology and social media, a lot of people have opinions, but not a lot of people are actually involved in what's happening. You know, it's like you get the sides that are split. Like, when everyone's fighting for their own sense of justice, who's wrong? And then that's the main argument, you know, because you got one side believes that they're right, the other side believes that they're right. But, like, what Travis constantly talks about on these programs is, you know, the natural law, certain things that we know as human beings we're not supposed to do. But yet when you got both sides sitting there bickering and arguing over each little thing, all while these, you know, puppet masters or the people that are actually playing the game, that's what's happening. They're keeping the people fighting amongst themselves, because why? Because if we were to turn against them, they'd be outnumbered severely. You know, so in turn, it's strategy, and like we've talked about it, it's a huge chess game, and we're not even parts on the board. You know, we're just sitting back watching, trying to get a voice out to hopefully, you know, move a piece.
When you look at several and almost any of the Middle Eastern bloc countries that were destabilized until they finally collapsed, and including Venezuela, you see intervention and funding to support both sides of the fence to create the division and the disconnect, right? So this is exactly what you're seeing in Canada at the moment. You have the unofficial or the official anti-hate network, which is government funded to and the media to censor and put the truth out there as they deem it. And then you have the unofficial side, which is the Antifa, government-funded and union-supported, to keep people in a constant state of turmoil, and they are so close to losing what little they have left that when you have a family, that becomes your priority. How do I put food on the table? How do I keep the lights on? It becomes to a point where they give up on trying to do anything else because they know they're only going to pay the price for it. And the extent of that is probably largely unknown around the world too, that one example, that Canada has the fastest growing rate of homelessness in the world. We have more than 1 million homeless in a nation that only has 37 million people. And that number is growing exponentially quick. When people are right now paying an average of about up to 76% of their income in taxes.
You know, that's horrendous. You know, would you say that the Canadians will never know life as they've known? You know, here in the States, you know, especially I'm the journalist. This is my show, and I've been doing a show with these gentlemen now for almost 3.5-4 years because we felt that it was a necessity to speak out, you know, and give our thoughts on how society is being perplexed and how laws are being changed, but not on paper, but unjustly by politicians in different aspects. The far left over here really, really hates me, you know, and I encourage them to do so because I will not step away from the fight. But do you feel that the true voice of the Canadian people will never be the same?
I think it's going to be impossible to be the same. I honestly do. This government in less than 4 years has completely altered the landscape of the socioeconomic and structure of Canada. We have had such an influx of secular migration because it's way beyond immigration. There's no way to have an accurate understanding of how many people have been brought into this country. They have not been vetted. It's less than a 2-hour process. You can walk across the border and you can be collecting social benefits in less than 2 hours, regardless of your history or where you're from. They are repatriating ISIS fighters on a regular basis here and claiming that they are a good voice for Canada. These are the kinds of things that have been happening. So, I mean, the more that they push, the more adamant I am about being the modern-day Laura Secord and telling you guys they are coming, and you guys have been so distracted by what's been happening at your southern borders that I'm afraid your biggest danger is now coming from the north, and it's not the Canadian people. It's the people that are new Canadians, shall we call them, because I don't want to get removed from the show or from the airways.
I feel you there, brother. You know, I'm one that's willing to step the boundaries and take whatever comes. You know, I'm not afraid of the FCC. I mean, that's why I'm glad my sponsors have legal counsel that protects me in all regards. You know, I look at Canada and you're correct. We're so, you know, focalized on our southern border that a lot of people are now intruding into Canada from other countries because they find it a faster and quicker way not only to cause and create hate and construe their message to the Canadian people and in your country, but they also find it a quick and easy way down into the United States where they can, you know, coexist, you know, amongst Antifa and the LGBTQ, you know, community. How hard is it for you to have such a prime minister that really protects the immigrants and the far left? How hard is it for you as a true Canadian to sit back and watch this? Because I know you spent most of your life there, if not all of your life. How hard is it to watch the fleecing of your country?
This is It's beyond imagination. It's beyond sci-fi. You can't make this up, what's happening here. And I, for a long time, I was a proud Canadian, and then for some years I was just a Canadian. But because I was ashamed of what was happening in our country. But I do believe in the Canadian people to that. I mean, it's human nature. None of us learn our lesson until the price we pay is high enough. And this is the million-dollar question in Canada: is how much of a price are we going to be willing to pay before we learn the lesson and we do something about this? Right now, it's unfortunate because we're coming into an election cycle here. We have an election, a federal election coming up in a few months. And I think this is really going to be the tipping point where there has been so much corruption, so much tampering with the election, so much foreign intervention. I know you guys have had those kinds of stories polarizing the states since your last federal election. But
yes,
the truth of it is it's been very, very, for as much as the story has been down there, there's been very little basis to it. Whereas here, everything that they could have imagined and dreamed of in those stories down there is happening real time in Canada. We have convicted terrorists sitting in Parliament with official positions. We have backdoor deals where they're bringing 2 million Somalis into Canada, unvetted. So we have the PMO's office commanding the RCMP, which is our federal police force, to destroy records on individuals. So there's no telling what is already here. We have seen cases of these people, because using that T word gets me into trouble up here, but these people traveling freely back and forth between the United States and Canada in some of these regions, and getting one case here where a father and son team were arrested with, I think, 43 kilograms of fentanyl and bomb-making equipment and rooms full of bomb-making equipment, and were released within an hour of being arrested. And the mainstream media says, nothing to look at here, folks. This is just a mistake. Well, I highly doubt it, and I really am thankful to your guys' protective services, because it was your guys' intelligence agencies that tipped off the police here and to find these guys. And so these guys were in and out, walked away, and anybody else that stands up or says anything about that is liable to become a political prisoner in Canada.
So by any means, you know, you speaking up on today's show, you could be held liable in your country, and that's a shame. That's a shame.
Absolutely.
Because just as human beings, you know, whether we agree with each other or not, we should be allowed to state our thoughts, state our feelings, especially for a country that we love, you know, an aspect of life that we love. You know, I preach all the time that, you know, I'm in my mid-50s and society is degressing. And, you know, it's not the people, it's the machine that is construing this hate.
Yes.
Through social media, through viable aspects, and correlating this. It's like it's an orchestrated purge, I guess you could say. And it's discontenting to me because I loved America. I still do love America in an essence, but it's saddened when I don't have the voice that I had 20 years ago. Now I could be fined for, you know, correlating my thoughts across the airways. Now I could be shut down. Now I'm, you know, I brought on an activist to speak for the Palestinian people just to get their story out. And I was put on the do not fly list. And aspects have been correlated and encapsulated on me that are sickening. I can't imagine your walk, brother. I'm going to pass the mic to Travis Hyland and let him ask you a few more questions, sir. Travis?
John, perfect timing. I was just going to interject there. I mean, Wayne, you brought up something that, you know, I guess if I have any accolades or expertise on this, you know, podcast, I'm the one who's a little bit more of a, you know, kind of technological dystopian conspiracy theorist in a lot of ways. And, you know, so I just have a quick question for you. And, you know, you brought up, kind of the word sci-fi dystopian, you know, and I'm sure everybody's seen, you know, what China is doing now with their social credit score and with their facial recognition algorithms, you know, and even like you see on Twitter here in the United States and everywhere, where it's like, a lot of these things now are just so algorithm controlled, you know. How do you feel about, you know, Canada moving forward? I was looking up one story in particular where there's somewhere in Canada where they're trying to create, you know, a new city that is completely, you know, technologically advanced, where the people there don't even have automobiles. It's all just, you know, smart cars and fully autonomous cars going around. Everything will be facial recognition, everything, you know. So how do you see the future of Canada and especially the future of activism and the future of being able to, you know, speak out what little we have, the more and more that things like facial recognition technology and these algorithms are intruding in our lives?
Well, what you have here in Canada right now, that's the Google city that you guys are speaking of, that you're speaking of there, and this is a major investment in the Toronto area where this is being built. And this is absolutely being built to be the prototype to show the world that, yes, this is how it's going to be done in the future, right? And what we're not maybe a point that needs to be brought up is to understand the ideology behind all of this. And now this is where we one of the differences between the left and the right here in Canada versus the left and the right in the United States there is now our prime minister here has literally, and these are quotes, said that the worst thing in Canada is old stock Canadians. And if we disagree with him, if our population disagrees with him, he will replace our population. So this is exactly what you guys are seeing is population replacement happening in Canada. Now, this may be hard to believe if you think about a prime minister, regardless if he's left or right, as having similar ideologies, but our prime minister does not. It's not been proven, but it is almost 100% certain that he is actually an illegitimate son of Castro. He admires the Castro dictatorship. He has publicly stated that he admires the basic dictatorship of China. This is what he is endeavoring to build in Canada. And let me ask you this. Does any dictator ever give up?
No.
They don't. They need to be taken down. So this is where I'm really afraid of this next election, that this is where we will see full-on-out dictatorship happen in a heartbeat in Canada in October.
That's just insane. You know, Travis, if you would like to rebut on that or form another question, go ahead, my friend.
I mean, that kind of goes along the same side that, you know, MF has been saying, you know, down here with our political system, you know. We're getting to a point now where, you know, at least for America, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans are so out of balance. And the fact that, you know, this crazy gender identity, you know, leftist politics have attached themselves to one of our political parties. And, you know, we're starting to see, you know, a lot of our, you know, as we call them, Democrats over here, you know, they're starting to eat themselves and they're starting to fall as a political party. And now MF has said, you know, multiple times, you know, that is one of the worst things that we could have, because if you just have the right and the Republicans of America, you know, now that they're the only party, you know, that gives them unchecked power. There's unchecked, you know, balances. And it's, you know, it's kind of the same thing where I worry that, you know, not necessarily Trump, but the president after Trump, that, you know, if we take this, you know, dystopian turn, it's going to be a full-on, you know, what you would call a dictatorship. And so, you know,
yes.
I have a question for you, Wayne, and I've posed this, you know, a lot of times on this show, but how do you see moving forward that, you know, us as people can get back to an objective public square, you know, a place where we can come and discuss ideas and, you know, let bad ideas sort themselves out and be beaten down by, you know, better ideas, you know? How do we get back to an objective public square where people can have discourse and discussion and, you know, we can move forward rationally and logically and in the best ways to suit everybody?
I don't know at this point if that's even going to be possible, because really the only way that you can have that ever is with freedom of speech. You have to be able to share your idea, whether you can share it articulately or not, needs to be irrelevant. And with political correctness, with somebody's feelings being able to command and dictate the flow of discussion, I don't believe we can ever get back to that. So I think the cornerstone of everything to have any hope for the future is going to be to regress the censorship, regress the political correctness to the point where, whether we like it or not, we have the right to speak what is on our mind. Without that happening, we're never going to see the de-escalation of groups like Antifa and left-wing radical groups of any kind or persuasion. They will always have sway and power so long as they have the ability to command political correctness.
That's a shame. That truly is a shame. MF, if you would like to add in on this.
So do. As a matter of fact, he brought up a brilliant point. The freedom of speech, very crucial. But if I may, I'd like to add another one. In my opinion, the freedom of thought. There's two modes between propaganda, mind manipulation, the control, even down to the MK Ultra level. It's like, we can dig into conspiracies, but I'm not going to go that deep into it. But you look at people's free will, their freedom of thought. At least I'd say 80% of the population, 90% of the population has had that all been taken away. Whether they're distracted, whether they're following a false belief or a false hope or like a false prophet or they're listening to snake oil salesmen. But people, they're too easily manipulated. Like you, I'm a cynist, and I don't see anything happening. Like maybe the floods, maybe the Book of Revelations comes true. But it's like outside of that, it's like the only way I could ever see it. Us being able to salvage anything as a species. I'm not even talking as a race, as a country. I'm talking like as a species, dude. Because literally, we're the only locusts on this planet, like true locusts. We consume all the resources. We don't give back. You can throw any type of species into an environment, it'll thrive. It'll build the environment. But you look at us. What do? We take all the resources. People are distracted. People are greedy. They're selfish. So I don't exactly see there being enough people to come together to fight the machine or fight whatever's happening. At least over here, we have a rogue. And the rogue, I mean, is Donald Trump. No, I don't trust him, so I'm going to get that right across the street. Every time I mention Trump's name, people get all in a bunch. But no, I don't trust the guy. It's just I like what he's doing, and I can pretty much predict a lot of what he's doing. Like, for example, right now, you figure, like, at least in my theory, I think he represents a whole other side that's trying to take over. Like, say, the new world, and then you have the old world is struggling drastically over here to hold on, and it's right now, they kind of already know they've been beaten, so now it's the last desperate disattempt to try and, like, scrape something back. Like, he has the four people now that you have Acacia Cortez, you have Emar, he calls them the squad, they're the forward ladies, right? And he pretty much, like, forced the Democratic Party to side with them to pretty much say that they are anti-Israel, anti-this, they're all about, illegal immigration, everything. Like, he literally forced the entire Democratic Party to side with those four. Because as far as identity politics goes, you can't, I can't agree with anything the left says if I was a Republican. If I was, a Democrat, I can't agree with anything that the Republicans say because they got everybody infighting, So to actually force an entire party to play by their own rules, and now they have to side with that. Because now it's not just the left, it's like the far left. They're the ones that are embracing socialism the whole nine yards. Trump is a genius on so many different levels at playing this game. And it freaks me out because I'm worried about, it's like an Ouroboros, a dragon eating its own tail, a snake eating itself, If the Democratic Party falls, there's going to be no checks and balances. Because right now, they have no champion, they have no message. They're completely distracted and going on witch hunts because they hate the guy so much, and he's using that in every way, shape, or form he can. He stokes the fire. He's like, he has this unique ability to have people destroy themselves. It's uncanny, dude. Like, it's superhero action. But he's a rogue, and he's creating the chaos. And amongst that chaos, if we had an old house, 200 years old, are you going to, keep trying to fix it? Or are you going to burn it to the ground and build something new? People need chaos. They need growth. Life has been too easy for everybody else, and now people are waking up and seeing. And I'm not sure if you're the age, so forgive me on this, but I'm mid-30s, so I've seen a little bit. Like, I've seen it without technology, with technology. You know, you look at people, things have never been easier for a lot of people, and that's creating the friction, the fire. You know, like it's creating something because people like you, you see it. You see it for the big picture, and you are out there actually trying to do something about it. You know, there's not a lot of people that will actually do it, and everything's being thrown in your way to go against it. Hey, at least in my theory, my hope, I hope that the rogue that we have creates enough chaos to where something will change. You know, it may not be a huge change like anything else. Humans, we don't adapt to change quickly. It takes years. It takes progressive, you know, programming to the change. But if some kind of spark could happen to where people realize just how messed up the system is. And the system, like what you were talking about, like it's organized. It's not just one country. It's a whole entire faction of people. And I think Donald Trump represents another faction, but that faction isn't out into the like the public eye or whatever. And like one of the things over here that Democrats constantly say, or at least the liberals or everybody else, they always talk about Trump was a puppet. That was one of the main key points they did when he first got in the presidency. But then, like I said, I'm in strategy, black science, everything else. So when you look at it that way, okay, so if Trump is being as powerful, flamboyant, you know, he breaks the rules. He writes rules. You know, like he does things that nobody else in the political scheme is willing to do. He's got the money to save himself, you know. But the way he's handling things, he knows how to cater to the masses. He knows how to get people's attention. He knows how to get things done. So I completely lost my point. Damn it. Sorry, I was going to do that.
Well, you made a bunch of points in there that I would like to tie into a little bit of a comment here. And first of all, I want to state that as a person, I am not a fan of Trump. But as from a political perspective, he is the only hope, I believe, that we have. And merely because you'll never see a monster in the dark until you shine a light on it. Mr. Trump is not scared to shine a light on the monsters and talk about them. But what we're running into here, and I think this is where both nations are having issues, is that we're focused on trying to work within a handcuffed set of systems that are 150 years old in Canada, a few hundred years old in the States. These systems of how our countries are built and run were great in their day, but we're trying to address global problems with antiquated systems within our own nations. And this makes it incredibly hard to fix real problems when you're handcuffed with the way you're approaching things. So I think both countries are very guilty of this. And what it does is it has us working on things that we think are the problems, but they're based on our thinking that is 150 years old, not versus real world needs. And what I mean by that is now we have companies like Facebook and Google and Amazon and Microsoft and all of these companies that started out as entertainment and information, but have now become utilities. And these utilities govern the flow of real world events now. So now this makes me ask you guys, are our rights and freedoms and things being taken away from us, or are we actually being reconditioned and retrained to be against these things? And those that have not had the proper amount of training are the ones that are speaking out. This is where I'm afraid that we're at. We've moved into an instant gratification society. If you don't like what you see on your phone, in 4 seconds you can have exactly what you want, and you can have it when you want it and how you want it. And this is going to take a lot longer than a quick fix. An election anywhere, there or here, will not change these things until we start to address the education and the indoctrination and the training that some of these technological companies have over us. And this is without even going into conspiracy theories. My business before committing to this full-time was in social media and marketing and management. And the science that goes into making people buy things is astronomical. But what we're not looking at is that also making people buy ideologies or just their next meal? And this is where we need to start looking at the problem and start dealing with the illness that I believe is these extra super conglomerate corporations that really laugh at governments because they are working it from a global perspective, and we are still arguing like tribes within our national perspectives that really have no ability to combat global problems.
Yeah. Most definitely. You know, I was watching a live that you did last night, and you were talking about the aspects of the homelessness of the elderly and the misabuse of the elderly. That is a growing sign now here in our country. As I live in the Midwest, the Bible Belt of the United States, you know, I'm seeing more and more the elderly being put aside and thrown away, because they're the ones with the true knowledge, the true voice. They don't want the people to hear them speak. You know, it's saddened, because I was hoping we would get a lot of calls from the Canadian people. Do you think it's the socialistic, the communistic aspect of what's being perplexed in Canada right now that has not allowed the Canadian people to call in and voice their opinion on the show today, sir?
I do. This is what I'm seeing. Now, I've been traveling for months coast to coast in this country, meeting with people face to face. And the one thing that I see in every set of eyes is a feeling of isolation and desperation. And people feel alone. They feel threatened. They don't have any recourse as to where their next paycheck is going to come from. I know more people that are in foreclosure for their homes than are buying new homes. And they are completely being assaulted on every sensory level, you know, with things that they don't agree with. But the instant, one person speaks out, you are shut down immediately. And we are such a large nation and with such a small population base that it's so spread out, it's very hard to come together with any kind of meaningful protests, right? It's very difficult to get people to gather together when they see, they know that if they even show up and don't say anything, their pictures are going to be put across mass media and they are going to be labeled and their jobs are going to be attacked. It doesn't matter if you're a preacher or a bus driver or a pipe fitter or a grass cutter, your job is in jeopardy the instant you set foot at a rally or a protest.
Yes. That's heartbreaking. You know, it's detrimental, and as a journalist, I'm seeing this being perplexed more and more in the States here. You know, for instance, if I speak about the Chinese culture, the FCC will shut me down. I'll be fined if I talk about, as I've done, you know, I mentioned earlier in the show, if I do shows on the Palestinian people, then my show is shut down. Let me ask you this, Wayne, and it's a purely hypothetical question, but it's not out of the, you know, out of real thought. You look at Palestine and Israel. An Israeli can go to a Palestinian's house that they like. They could call the police and tell them, we like that house. The police will then throw the Palestinian people out of their house, and now the Israeli owns that house. Do you see that type of aspect coming to Canada in the near future?
It already is here. You are having seniors standing at the grocery line getting their groceries kicked away so that these other people can have the right to be in line first. They are 100% being given preferential treatment by all governments and services. Here we've got veterans that are having to sue the government for a prosthetic because they are told that the veterans are asking for more than they can give. Meanwhile, a newly landed immigrant is with a family of 16 kids that was never vetted. Is given a free ride, a free home, free rooms, free medical care, living allowances. So you're seeing people that here it's so commonplace now that it's just accepted. You don't see too many ethnic panhandlers or homeless. And now the government here is taking over that too. And it's funny too, because they're actually soliciting and endorsing euthanasia for seniors and things like that to just end your suffering, right? End it early. This is the kind of stuff that's happening in Canada.
So they're basically implying that the elderly are disposable. You know, and that's an aspect that is being perplexed in this country. You know, I'm going to hand the mic to Travis Hyland, let him ask you one more question, and then I'll come back and we'll wrap up the show. Travis?
You know, man, I think this is a really important show for you know, a lot of our American listeners to you know, really take hold and understand, you know, just how many of, you know, these crazy things that I'm usually the one on here screaming about in, like, this social sci-fi dystopian, you know, over-bureaucracy, government-controlled, you know, madness. And it's happening just a few miles, you know, north of our border. You know, it's like me and MF here are from California, you know, so we are in the most left and the most liberal of just about all the states even in America, you know, and we're experiencing the same thing. You know, in California, if I don't have health insurance, the government is going to fine me for like $1,500. Yet if you come over here illegally and get over the border, now you get free health insurance, you get to go to school for free, you get, you know, all of these things that are actually in decline since Trump took over, you know, but because now it's, you know, part of the right, it's being made this huge social and moral issue, even though Obama had, you know, 100 times the amount of kids in cages that Trump ever did. You know, I mean, so we'll just get that out of the way. But I'm just really curious, man, as to, you know, you talk about there's even spots in America that are going through the same, you know, things with a lot of the most extreme case that, you know, we always have is Sharia law. And it's, you know, enough people from one culture being able to come, you know, over into a company or into a country, and you get enough of them to where now they change the rules for, you know, whatever the culture is coming in rather than them assimilate. We have that here in Dearborn, Michigan. You know, there's spots in Detroit, Michigan, and all over Michigan that were hit so hard by the economic crisis that everybody moved out. And, you know, then we just started importing, you know, hundreds and hundreds of Syrian and Lebanon, you know, all of these refugees from war-torn countries. And now they're, you know, the main population. I've yelled on here, you know, several times about, you know, free trade and what free trade actually means. And in a lot of cases, you know, free trade also means free trade of labor. And it means that, you know, you can import people from, you know, incredibly, you know, war-torn and all of these, you know, third-world countries, and it, you know, quickly becomes a race to the bottom. So I'm just wondering how much of that in Canada are you seeing where, you know, it's you have Canadians who have, you know, had a craft or had a job for, you know, so long, and now that the government is basically bringing in and subsidizing, you know, a cheaper form of labor to get these kinds of things done.
We're seeing lots of that in Canada. And it's unfortunate, you know, I know what you guys are seeing from the news in Canada. I spend a fair amount of time traveling through the southern states as well. And it's one of the most heartbreaking things to me because I get asked often, very often, why do y'all hate us so much? Why do you hate Americans so much? And you know, the truth of it is we do not. We do not hate Americans. But this is what our propaganda machine up here wants to you guys to think, is that orange man bad, you know, everything bad down there. And the sad part of it is we don't hate Americans. We just don't want to be Americans, right? Now, this is not an insult. We have our own culture and our own identity up here, and this is what we're fighting to keep. And they are making it absolutely certain that everything outside of Canada, all people see are sunshine and lollipop. They call it the Sunny Ways campaign, right? So there is very little of this truth that is actually reaching people out there outside of Canada. And in Canada, you know, you'll see statistics, or our jobless rate is down. We've got so many millions of new jobs, but they don't tell you that these are all government-created jobs, part-time government jobs, or subsidized jobs. no company in Canada that has a large employee base hires a Christian Judeo white Caucasian male anymore, because the government will make them pay 100% of that person's salary. But if they bring in one of these newly minted Canadians, the government will pay half that person's salary. So these businesses are so hand to mouth. How can they not take advantage of only paying half salaries? So they become a part of this system. If they want to stay in business, they can't hire me. Why, when they got to pay me a full wage, but they can hire this guy in his sandals for half of the wages.
Yeah.
So this is where the economic downturn is coming.
Yeah, it's horrific, you know. You know, Wayne, we're coming at the top of the hour. You know, my friend, I told you when I first met you that we, you know, I'd bring you on the show, and you said for what, you know, but now you understand where my train of thought was and why I wanted you on my show. You know, most people look at me as a combat sports photographer and a sports journalist, but a lot of America is starting to take notice and realize that I'm a journalist because we've been doing this show for so long. Just to let you know before I hand the mic to you, we're being simulcast right now on 367 FM radio stations worldwide. You know, so with that being said, if you had a message for your fellow Canadians or a message for the world on this, you know, final question of the interview, what would that message be, my friend? What would your words of thoughts and wisdom be, or just a statement for Canada in general?
Oh, that's a really powerful spotlight to be put on. And I think that for most Canadians, I think we need to remember where we come from, who we are, and we still represent the true North, strong and free, and God save us all. That's we just cannot surrender. I believe that the world is coming, is awakening to the closest thing in history would be the French Renaissance. But I think we are coming into a global Renaissance where we just will have to come together and remember who we are, what we stand for, and eliminate the identities and become Canadian first, be American first, put everything else aside. Because if we don't, we have no future. If we do, there's still the future is uncertain, but it's guaranteed no future if we don't. So it's going to take all of us.
You know, as I put up my post, we are all one. If we don't come together and unify against the machine, then we will lose who we are.
Absolutely.
We will lose. You know, we're already losing our ancestry. We're already losing, you know, aspects of the past. This, you know, the far left is tearing them down, having them removed, you know, and it saddens me. Wayne, I thank you from the bottom of my heart for joining today's show. There's going to be many more of them to come, many more.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to share with you guys.
Oh, hey, you know what? If we don't, as you say, who will? And we have to
exactly.
Come together, you know, as one, and show the world what's truly going on. With that being said, I would like to thank you for joining my show today. I'm going to pass the mic to Travis, let him say his farewells, and then MF.
You know, man, that was a beautiful statement, and I think, you know, that's what everyone needs to, you know, take from this. You can look at it in, you know, so many different ways, but we have to come together as people and come to an objective, reasonable, fair, and most of all, honest, and truthful, you know, reality that we can all, you know, move forward in. You know, we got to get rid of this false scarcity mindset, you know, and we have to stop being controlled by 1,000 truly evil people who are, you know, the head of some of the you know, most powerful banks and governments, you know, across the world. You know, everyday people have to make the decision to go out, you know, and to really fight for what they believe in and to speak the truth and to, you know, get up every day and try and make their community and their brothers and sisters around them, you know, just a little bit better and a little bit more together. And if we can all, you know, come together as Canadians, as Americans, as Mexicans, you know, as everybody, and stand up and finally say that, you know, we're going to move this system into one of honesty and truth and you know, equality of opportunity, not equality of outcome. You know, I think that's one of the most important things we can do moving forward.
I think we need to all ask ourselves, if not me, then who? And if you have to make an excuse, you're already wrong.
Yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly. MF, your farewells, my friend.
Wayne, it was a pleasure, and I'll end it. I wanted to answer your questions or your questions, so I'll give it the best I can. But you asked if we were losing our freedoms, but the truth is the only freedoms we've ever had were the options that were presented to us at the time that, you know, they happened, whether that be choice or thought or whatever the case may be. So we've only really had the freedom of what was provided for us at the time it was. You know, if people keep that in mind, that's all we can really do. You know, do the best we can with what we got at the time it happens. But then the second part, you asked if our freedoms were being eroded. Hey, it's been happening since the Beatles, my man.
Most definitely. You know, to everybody on today's show, I truly thank you. Wayne, I commend you for having the heart and the determination and the perseverance to come on my show today. To each and every one of you, thank you. God bless you. And I appreciate each and every one of you coming on the show and sharing your thoughts with the world. You know, as a journalist, I feel each and everybody is entitled to a voice, and that voice will never cease on my side. Wayne, thank you so much again, my brother. MF, Travis.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much. God bless Canada. God bless America. We will come together as one. On that note, to each and everybody, have a fantastic day. Thank you. God bless.
You are appreciated. When I was young, me and my mama had beef, 17 years old, kicked out on the street. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was a fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Shed tears with my baby sister. Over the years, we was poor than other little kids. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong, we blamed mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hell, hugging on my mama from a jail cell. And who thinking elementary? Hey, I see the penitentiary one day. Running from the police, that's right. Mama catch me, put a whoop into my backside. And even as a crack fiend, mama, you always was a black queen, mama. I finally understand, for a woman it ain't easy trying to raise a man. You always was committed, a poor single mother on welfare. Tell me how you did it, there's no way I can pay you back. But the plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it. Tell us it was fair. No love for my daddy, cause the coward wasn't there. He passed away and I didn't cry, cause my anger wouldn't let me feel for a stranger. They say I'm wrong and I'm heartless, but all along I was looking for a father, he was gone. I hung around with the thugs, and even though they sold drugs, they showed a young brother love. I moved out, started really hanging. I needed money of my own, so I started slanging. I ain't guilty, cause even though I sell rocks, it feels good putting money in your mailbox. I love paying rent when the rent's due. I hope you got the diamond necklace that I sent to you. Cause when I was low, you was there for me. You never left me alone because you cared for me. And I can see you coming home after work late. You're in the kitchen trying to fix us a hot plate. Just working with the scraps you was given. And mama made miracles every Thanksgiving.
But now the road got rough, you're alone, trying to raise two bad kids on your own. And there's no way I can pay you back, but my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it. And dear mama, some liquor and I reminisce, cause through the drama I can always depend on my mama. And when it seems that I'm hopeless, you say the words that can get me back in focus. When I was sick as a little kid, to keep me happy there's no limit to the things you did. And all my childhood memories are full of all the sweet things you did for me. And even though I act crazy, I gotta thank the Lord that you made me. There are no words that can express how I feel. You never kept a secret, always stayed real. And I appreciate how you raised me and all the extra love that you gave me. I wish I could take the pain away. If you can make it through the night, there's a brighter day. Everything will be alright if you hold on. It's a struggle every day, gotta roll on. And there's no way I can pay you back, but my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it.
Don't you know we love you,
dear mama.